The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
How you doing, Pierre?
I'm good, Tony. The only thing missing from Boston where I'm sitting right now on the Bruins bench, you, Melnick, and Nyland.
That would be a heck of a line. That would be good.
I'm not going back to that arena. Last time I went there, I fainted. That's a true story,
by the way. But now I know you're a physical fitness fanatic.
Walking more than ever before. But anyway, Pierre, Sidney Crosby is not only the best player in the National Hockey League, but I don't know if there's anyone who can bat a puck out of midair better than him. I mean, I don't know how many times he did it this year, but I've seen that goal at least three times.
The only man I've ever seen do it better, and he didn't do it to score, but he did it in a lot of different situations, is Christopher Pronger. I'm just telling you, he was amazing at doing it, Pronger was. Going back to when I had the privilege of coaching when he was 19 years of age, but he did it his entire career. He was amazing at it. He really was. But I've never seen a man score goals like Crosby does. And you know what, Tony, I got to share this with you. I was just talking in the hallway with Lou Lamoriello, the president of hockey operations with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and general manager. And we were, you know, discussing different things around the league. And he goes, well, you were there last night. What'd you think? I said, there's no player in the league better than Crosby right now. There's nobody better. There are a lot of guys really good, but nobody's better than him right now. Nobody.
The big question, though, Pierre, is, look, obviously they look like, you know, if the cup could be handed out on night number one, they would hand it out to them right away. But the big question is, do they as a group, do you think they're going to have enough gas in the tank to be able to get it done 3 years in a row?
They will if they can get out of series early. Now, 7-0, and I'm saying this, if you're a Flyer fan, I'm saying this with respect to your team. I know a lot of people are beating the Flyers up today. I'm not one of them. I think if Scott Laughton scores when it's 1-0 Pittsburgh, that totally swings the entire game. The whole energy of the game swings. But he didn't score, and Pittsburgh surged right after that again. So that was something that made it was a little bit closer than what the score indicates, and obviously they didn't get great goaltending from Brian Elliott. He'll have to be better if, in fact, he gets to play in game two. But if Pittsburgh is going to be able to make it a three-peat, they cannot go into extended series. And I can still see a way that Philadelphia can extend this series a long way. And then who knows who they get. If Pittsburgh were to win, who would they get in the second round? I mean, that's another big question, too.
Okay, so what does Philadelphia have to do?
Well, stabilize the goaltending, number one. Number two, don't take penalties. You can't take more than three penalties in the game against Pittsburgh. If you do, you're too much time killing, and their power play is number one in the league for a reason. It's amazing, just all the different weapons. So the first thing is obviously solidify the goaltending. Second thing, don't take penalties. And third thing, I think they need to create a better matchup against Crosby, Rust, and Gensel, the top line. They have to. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to have to do it. And if they don't do it, I don't see how they have an avenue to win.
I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Pierre, because even when the Penguins go up against good goalies, they make some good goalies look pretty bad. I mean, they have that much firepower. So I don't know how you stabilize the goaltending other than coming up with a plan to try and defend till death against these guys and play the stingiest kind of game you've ever played.
Exactly. And so we agree. It comes down to structure. And if anybody can do it, that's a really enlightened coaching staff. Ian LaPerriere is an extremely good assistant coach, very good tactically. He was a very good player when it came to tactics, too. Dave Haxtell is a brilliant hockey tactician. Trust me, I know most fans are like, Dave Haxtell, who's that? Trust me, he's a tremendous coach. And Gordon Murphy's done. Look at the development of Ivan Provorov. Look at the development of Shane Gostisbehere. Look at the development of Travis Sanheim. That's all on Gordon Murphy, who runs the defense there. So their coaching staff is more than capable of getting this adjusted. They really are. I just worry because of it. I do think there's a crisis of confidence. They've played Pittsburgh five times this season, four in the regular season, once in the playoffs. They've lost all of those games, and they never gave up less than five goals. So they always gave up five or more goals in all of their losses.
Pierre, if they do have enough gas in the tank, is anybody better than Pittsburgh?
I think Nashville could be. I think Nashville could be. I think Winnipeg's got the potential to be. I'm in Boston here tonight. I think they have the potential to be, if they can get all their players back. Ryan Donato will be a healthy scratch here tonight. They're still battling an injury situation here in Boston. I think Toronto, if they had a couple more D-men, they won't have them this year, but I think long-term they could be. Tampa's obviously very good. I don't think it's as close-ended, Tony, as a lot of people are speculating on Pittsburgh. I think there'll be a lot of competition. I think your point at the beginning was really well taken. You know, how are they going to do it? Are they going to have enough gas in the tank? And if they go into long series, I just don't know if they will have enough gas in the tank.
Pierre, coaching is probably more important in the playoffs than it is in the regular season. You're going up against the same team every other night. You got one guy with a tremendous amount of experience versus another guy who at the National Hockey League level has less. I mean, it's advantage Toronto, as good as Cassidy has coached this year for the Bruins and the Leafs. But how do you kind of like overcome that, Pierre, when you're going up against a coaching staff that's probably superior to yours? What do you do?
Well, you don't let coaching really become a weapon. You make sure that your players are prepared. Players 1 through 18 are prepared. So you simplify the game plan. Every guy has to understand their role. You make sure they understand that. Don't get into a tight chess match. Make sure your players play with discipline. So your question is really well-founded. The experience side, Mike dominates. There's no question versus Bruce. But Bruce has a system and a tempo and a template for the way they play. And if the Bruins continue to buy into it, they're going to be fine. If they don't, then, and it becomes more of a freelance game, then the coaching experience on the other side definitely will play into the hands, anyways, of Toronto.
Mike Babcock says he's relying on his depth to get him through this series. He's relying on his depth to win him this series. Pierre, is he saying that, in his opinion, his third and his fourth lines are so much better than Boston's? Is that what he's trying to tell us?
Well, he may be, but if he is, he's making a mistake. Because if they have, and they will have, Corrali back in the lineup, talking about Boston now. Corrali, Achari, and Schaller might be one of the top fourth lines in the National Hockey League. And if they get running around, Toronto doesn't have anybody that can match up to that. They do not. All three of those guys are big, all three of those guys are fast, and all three of those guys are robust. And they have surprisingly high skill level and cycling ability. So that could be a problem. I respectfully not agree with Mike. Now, again, I didn't hear that soundbite, so I don't know what the context was. But I would tell you that that's one of the things that I'm looking for early in the series, to see if the depth players of the Bruins can play at the level they showed through the regular season. And if they can, that could be a bit of a problem for Toronto. And the other thing is, everybody's talking about Bergeron against Austin Matthews. I'm not so concerned about that if I'm Toronto. I'm more concerned about McAvoy and Chara, and the physical pounding that those two guys can inflict on a player like Austin Matthews. And for the fans that don't know, Austin Matthews and Charlie McAvoy both played at the U.S. National Development Team program for 2 years together, so they're very familiar with one another. They also played in the World Junior together. So there's Charlie's got the book on Austin. He knows. See, I mean, he knows a lot about him, probably more than any other defenseman in the league. And so that's going to be an interesting little thing to watch as we go along here.
So, Pierre, since you bring up that matchup situation with Austin Matthews, of course, we remember the last time these two teams played, it was two different coaches. It was Carlisle and it was Julien for the Leafs and Bruins. But yeah, it was a crazy matchup game. Like, both teams were obsessed with it, and Kessel was moving from the first line to the fourth line. They were trying to get him away from Chara and Bergeron. Do you see these types of games being played with the matchups?
No, that's different. Boston, one of the things they really like to do is transition the puck. It's a lot different than when Claude was here. And again, Claude's systems worked fantastically well here. They went to a final in 1 year, and they went to the final and won another year. So they had a lot of success when he was here. But where it's different is, you've got McAvoy, who can energize from his position. You've got Grizzlick, who can energize from his position. We're talking about defensemen pushing the pace. And you've got Torrey Krug. So in every one of the tandems on the back end, you've got a guy that can engage not just defensively but offensively as well. And Bruce Cassidy turns these guys loose. Because of that, it makes matchups a little bit more tricky for everybody, because it changes the way the game is played. There's not as much icing. Usually there's not as much offside, and usually there's not as many faceoffs because of that. And when you don't have that many faceoffs, it's harder to play the matchup game. It's just because you get your players too out of sequence. It's a much harder game to play when there's not a lot of whistles.
With Pierre Maguire. Pierre, did you have a chance to listen to Pierre Dorion on the two things that have to change next season? Did you hear that?
Pierre Dorion? No, I did not.
Wait till you hear this, Pierre.
Two things that will change, that's for sure, if he's back, is the implementation of younger players in our lineup. But he will decide who gets what ice time, and we're going to practice more. Rest is a weapon. If I hear that one more time, I'll go crazy.
Pierre Dorion.
Well, no, but listen, I do Ottawa radio every morning.
Yeah.
And last year, there wasn't a lot of negative things you could say about Ottawa. But one of the things I said all the time, and I'm very good friends with Guy Boucher. When he was over in Switzerland, whether he was coaching with his club team or coaching the Spangler Cup, we were in touch a fair bit. And, you know, I've always tried to help him in a lot of different ways because I really respect him as a person and as a coach. But one of the things I didn't appreciate and I didn't like was the way they tried to break in young players. I thought they did a terrible job with it. I didn't think they handled Chabot very well. I didn't think they handled Colin White very well. They've got younger players coming like Logan Brown, like Alex Vermenten, like Batherson, Drake Batherson. They've got some young guys coming through their system that they can't do the same thing with those guys as they did with Chabot and White this year. That was not good.
Pierre,
wasn't good at all.
I agree with you 100% on that, but what do you think of the fact that, you know what, Pierre Dorion still hasn't confirmed Guy Boucher and says he's still going to take a look at it and he'll make up his mind sometime in May. I would think that if I'm a general manager and Mitch Gallo's my coach, I'm evaluating him every day. And I'm not going to need until May to decide whether or not I want to keep him on board or not. Am I wrong here, or is something wrong with this picture?
No, you're not wrong, Tony, but think about this. This is where, again, I think owners and managers are paying far more attention. There are going to be other coaches that are going to become available. There's one that just became available, Alain Vigneault. He's still owed 2 years on his contract with the Rangers. The Rangers also, remember this, have to pay, and I don't mean the Rangers, but Madison Square Garden, same ownership. They have to pay Jeff Hornacek, who just got fired by the Knicks, $5 million a year for another year. And they also have to pay Phil Jackson $12 million. That's $17 million on the basketball side. Alain Vigneault's contract's obviously very large as well. So you're talking almost $23 to $24 million all in with assistant coaches and everything else. That's not a free ticket. I don't care how much money they make at Madison Square Garden. So Alain Vigneault's available, and he's got 2 years left in his deal. You don't think they'd want to cut a deal with another team to maybe take him on as a coach? I'm using that as an example. I'm not saying I have inside knowledge. But you don't think teams are going to be knocking on the Rangers' door saying, can we have permission to talk to Vigneault? And maybe that opens up other coaches becoming available. So I think a smart manager would wait before he is going to confirm, because maybe there's another fit. And again, I don't think Guy Boucher is a bad coach. I think he's a good coach. But something went off the rails there this year. It went off, and it went off real fast. And that's something internally they have to look at.
According to the numbers that we're hearing, that Guy Boucher was paid in Ottawa, Pierre, which is unconfirmed. It's just the word on the street. They're not going to get much for how much they want to pay their coaches.
Well, again, you have to look at other coaches that may have contracts with existing NHL teams.
Yeah.
Where those existing NHL teams, and I went through this. I'll tell you this. When I got fired by Hartford, I still had significant time on my contract. And they made a deal with Ottawa, and I ended up going to Ottawa. And Ottawa got me on their budget, on their line item, on the coaches' salaries and scouting salaries at a far reduced rate because Hartford was paying good portions of the money to me that was on my established contract. So that's one thing, again, that you'll see, I think, not just with Ottawa, but with a lot of other teams. They'll be looking to see if they can't cut deals with teams on established coaching contracts that are still out there that may become available.
Okay, so how about this then? How about this? The Alex Burrows deal wasn't a very good one. To give up a young player for Alex Burrows for a couple of years, not a good deal. You're better off with Kyle Turris than you are with Matt Duchene, especially considering what you had to give up. And they shouldn't have let Mathot go. I mean, I don't think Pierre Dorion has done a very good job. And granted, I think that Guy Boucher maybe has some methods that he has to change. But can we agree that Pierre Dorion did not have a great year of managing?
The Mathot thing was tough. It really was. There was a contract that had to be in place. There was an expansion draft that was going on. They still had Phaneuf under contract. I mean, they were in a tough situation. I didn't like the fact they let Mathot go because I thought he was a perfect partner for Erik Karlsson. Erik obviously struggled this year. Part of that was a surgery. Part of that was, you know, just a long year, and obviously the tragic situation with his, stillborn child, which is just amazingly sad. So there was a lot of difficult stuff for him, but Mathot and he were a tremendous tandem. In terms of the Tourist deal, I think part of that was because they weren't going to be able to get Kyle signed. You saw how quickly Kyle had a deal done with Nashville as soon as he was signed. I don't think they could have gotten him signed in Ottawa. So I think that's one of the reasons why that situation was hastily taken care of. But I told you before, some of the names of the young players they have coming. And yet, if they win the Cup last year, Tony, let me ask you that. And they were a shot away from going to the final. Everybody knows that. If they win the Cup last year, the Alex Burrows deal is nothing. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And Alex was a part of their run. So I know everybody looks at it now and say, oh, that's terrible. Last year wasn't so terrible. It was actually pretty good.
Ray Ferraro thinks Drew Doughty's going to get a game. Pierre Maguire thinks what?
I think a game. I don't think more. I don't think less. I would be surprised. That's really the first one we've seen in the playoffs. And it's obviously something that was engaged early on in that game with Will Carrier and Drew Doughty. Carrier was going after Doughty the entire first period, and it was really apparent he was getting under his skin. And then, you know, it's a big moment in the game in the third period, and he got him. He got him good, and he got him right to the head. The principal, based on the letter of the law, the principal point of contact was the head. It wasn't the chest. It wasn't the shoulder. It wasn't a brush. The principal point of contact was the head. I don't think he'll get more than a game, but I think he'll get game two off.
How amazing is Vegas, Pierre?
I've been trying to warn people about that since last June when they had the expansion draft. It's amazing, and it's enlightened ownership. It's a general manager that really did a good job hiring people that were very familiar with pro players that were available. They came down to ideology of coachability, character, and speed. And if you didn't have those things, you probably weren't going to get picked up by them. And, they stole some players, too, because there were some protection issues. They stole Shea Theodore out of Anaheim. They stole William Karlsson out of Columbus. I would say they stole Mate Schmidt out of Washington because George McPhee had signed him as an undrafted player out of the University of Minnesota. I mean, I can continue, chapter and verse on all their players, but the biggest heist, and it was a protection problem, was Marc-Andre Fleury. It was a heist. It was an amazing heist, and it would have been expansion back in 92 and 93, Marc-Andre Fleury never would have been available because the rules changed. So George really utilized the rules to his benefit, and really that's how they built this magnificent, magnificent situation. And it's not getting worse. They're only going to get better there. They're insulated. Going long-term, they're going to be in a really good spot.
Have fun in Boston tonight, Pierre.
The only thing missing, Nyland up and down the boards, Melnick, trying to distribute the puck, and Marinero's fury going to the net.
Yeah, I'll tell you what Marinero loves most about Boston, the North End and the restaurants there.
You just like to go to Pizzeria Regina. I know you.
Yeah, I've been there before.
It's a great spot. Really nice. Tony, you sound awesome. Really nice.
Thanks, Pierre.
I hope you're doing great.
Cheers. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. All right, there you have it. It's 527 on TSN 690. Marinero along with Gallo and Francis. All right, so he did his homework, and he has a different opinion.